with the 21st of March 2017 at the second day of the Digital Innovator Summit. Yep. We had a talk from somebody who had the experience in this world for, I don't know, 25 years now?
26 years.
So, and this extra year he just condensed into a 1 hour talk, and he's just going to present himself first of all.
Hi, I'm Srini, and I'm the managing director of Ananda Vikatan Publications. We are a 90-year-old publishing house, 91 to be precise, and we publish 12 magazines, we publish books, we publish television daily soaps, and now we're into a lot of the web content, we're into social media, and we're aiming to become a digital first or even a digitally independent media company, probably 3 years down the line, because that's one of the things I wanted to say here, but I forgot that. I said, last 2 years, we've been growing at 50% year-on-year revenues. So the next 3 years, we've kept ourselves a target of 100% growth year-on-year revenues. And if we do that, we can actually become a digital-only media company with everything else being on the periphery. So that gives me a lot of opportunity to experiment with other medium, right? So it's a tall task. It's a very big order. But I think if we are not poised to do it, I don't know who is. So we're going to really try and attempt that.
When did you start your first learning here at the DIS?
Well, that's exactly a couple of years from today. When I first came in, I really didn't know what to expect. Juan Senor had made a presentation in February of 2015 in Chennai, and I was the host. We have what is called the Association of Indian Magazines, and I was one of the office bearers, and I was hosting the event in Chennai. So when I met Juan there, I was telling him, this is what we are doing on digital, but I didn't think we had kind of got it together yet. So he said, come listen to my speech tomorrow. So when I listened to his speech, and then later I told him, then he said, why don't you come down to, and Chris, I have to say, Chris Levelin too, he told me, come down to this, you know, a lot of things happen out there. So I came here 2015, exactly 2 years ago today, was blown away. Two things were clear. It looked like everybody was facing a similar problem that I was. So that made me feel very at ease. I wasn't the only vulnerable one. I wasn't the only one who was having, you know, challenges. And I knew that these challenges were being faced across the globe. And the best part was I could see so many speakers and so many publications which were done what they needed to do to transform what their business was. So I saw hope, and I saw there was so much of learning, so many people I met, and so much of things that I could take away. That day, I think I told Juan, I said, I would like to hire you, provided the terms are right. So I think then we got into a discussion of the hows and the whens and wheres and things like that. So I guess it truly started here, right here. And I'm very proud to say that in 2 years' time, I've come back here and I have just presented for 1 hour on stage. I would have been terrified if you had told me that 2 years ago.
On stage, you said that you have been failing as the editor and as the mastermind of the whole process. But during the talk, it was very clear that this failure was a very intrinsic moment of success. Don't you think so?
Yeah. So in hindsight, every failure is a success, because you don't learn much from success, but you learn a lot from failures. So I think we have always been attempting to learn. You know, for me, I have also a little personal problem here. I won't call it a problem, but it's one of the things which keep coming back to me. I am a third generation entrepreneur. So I keep thinking to myself, you know, am I doing enough to make this go the distance? Am I here only because of my lineage? Or am I here because I'm adding value? So I would like to add value. And the only way to add value is to learn and then to try and disseminate. So that's what I've been trying to do. And I think learnings have been galore, absolutely.
I remember that we had a long discussion about different cultures and about different approaches to this kind of process. What has been similar and what has been so different in your terms?
So I would say the single biggest challenge that we still continue to face today is that we, you know, as a culture, we pay deference. We always defer to our elders. We always defer to our bosses. And we always defer to authority, right? So from there, getting people to speak up without being subjective is very, very difficult. That is very, very challenging. And I would say that continues to be the problem today, because the moment you think that you owe deference, you are hiding the truth. You are not telling things as it is. And when you break out from the deference, you end up actually, you know, carrying your luggage with you, and you're not actually being very objective about the whole thing. So criticize the issue, not the person, is something that has to be ingrained into us. It is not something that is normally ingrained into us, right? So that's not in our DNA. Getting that to surface is the real challenge. I would say it's happening with about 15 to 20% of my leaders now. And I would hope that over a period of time, if that truly happens at the leadership level, I think it's done.
But this is what is benchmark for European leaders as well, isn't it?
Oh, really? I was under the impression that in the West, everybody's, you know, they speak their mind. Or, of course, you have to be politically correct, but you typically tend to be objective. I am under the impression that in the West, generally people criticize opinion or criticize ideas and not people.
You just see that in our own culture, we just have a big backlash on this tipping point.
Oh, you're talking about the Brexit and the Trump effect and the Marine Le Pen. Yeah, yeah, it's happening. Well, I think so that's what you're saying. So the majority have been suppressed by the intelligentsia, and now they're breaking out. I promise you, till you told me that, it never struck me.
But that's why we have an interesting learning from you, from your own Tamil culture, because you have been always struggling with this problem because this was evident. We never have been struggling with that because we didn't see the evidence. So maybe we just have to turn the wheel around again.
That's interesting. I would never have thought of it that way, but that's put very eloquently.
So now the listeners may understand what we have discussed the next couple of years before. And you see, we always go into depth. We always break the rules of the interview. So to make a long interview, which won't happen, very short and simple, just answer the one and only question which I haven't asked, but you would have liked to answer. Thank you, Tommy.
That's a tough one. How do you measure if it's really working? And how do you course correct unless you measure? The biggest challenge which I see here is that we are talking to people who are qualitative experts. They are people who tell stories, they are emotive people, and they are people who believe that a story well written or a story well told is all there is to it. Now, when you start measuring that, and then when you attempt to manage it, I would not want to end up dumbing down the process of storytelling itself. The other question I would like to ask myself is, what is the one thing which you believe can take you from where you are to where you want to be? I think there is a lot of discussion and talk and bonhomie that happens behind the scenes when a story gets broken. But all of that doesn't get captured in the story itself. So many times I would find discussions really enchanting. I would say, guys, we should write about this. But when we write, there would only be certain perspectives that would be written about. The real stuff would not have come out. So is there a way to actually get the story behind the story to actually be panned out as a story itself? I think the New York Times did that. They were talking about that yesterday. I would love for that to happen. You know, to be able to recognize those behind the story and to recognize that thought process which went in before a story was told. I think that would really make a difference between where we are and where we want to go.
In European technology, and especially in US, we have an answer for that.
Okay.
And the answer is called 3D and VR.
Yeah.
In 3D and VR, we are discovering the three dimensions of thought. But we have never thought about the dimensions of storytelling. So maybe we have to co-opt the technology and the way of thinking about a story between the different cultures to make something new.
Wow. I would love to learn about that. I would love to understand a little bit more about that, and I would love to enable my boys to be able to do that.
So we'll have lots of talk to go on from this moment, but for today I just say thank you for the interview. Being our guest in Berlin always is a pleasure to host you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And I must say that in these 2 years, the journey has been extraordinary. If at all anything, this journey itself has been worth it. I don't know if we're going to reach the destination that we have planned, but I'm pretty happy with the journey that I've had thus far. Thank you.
Thank you.